update for December 6th, 2015. I'm Fleetwood DeNova.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yep, and you know, there are weeks where there's absolutely nothing to talk about, and then there's this week where apparently absolutely everything happened at once. So we're going to have quite a few things to talk about here. And I guess we should probably talk a little bit off the top about the stupid situation involving Konami and Hideo Kojima at the Game Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Where they basically blackballed him and said, yeah, you can't show up in relation to Metal Gear Solid 5. And apparently most of the other developers there were not pleased.
Oh no.
I bet.
Yeah. So, yeah. Congratulations, Konami. You've managed to basically bury yourselves. So that's awesome.
All those bridges you once had, you just burned every last one of them.
Yep.
I think it was Jeff Gerstmann who said that this is a company that's clearly just trying to burn everything to the ground as it exits the game industry. And this is just, you know, at some point it stops being surprising.
Yeah.
It, for my part, the only thing I found at all surprising was the fact that the Game Awards people didn't just let him in because he's Hideo fucking Kojima.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't need Metal Gear Solid 5 to justify his presence there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, he's one of those people who at any given game industry event, he should be able to go wherever the hell he wants. Whether it's
pretty much.
The Game Awards or E3.
We are talking about one of the most acclaimed developers of his generation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
so that's kind of sad, but at this point it's like, Konami, whatever you once were, you're not now, so.
Yeah.
That being said, we may as well go on to more happy things, like what we've been playing this week, and looks like by what I'm seeing here, it's been kind of a busy week.
Yeah, basically over here we're dealing with this miserable frozen blanket of suck that has descended on Cache Valley. And so it's absolute like RPG weather in the purest sense. So I've kind of moved away from the NHL, WWE stuff, and I'm focusing strictly on RPGs. Trails in the Sky SC, of course, taking up the majority of my time. Because I'm really going to want to get the review out for that in time for Game of the Year time, hint, hint.
Yeah.
On top of that, I also downloaded the Final Fantasy VII PC port to PS4.
As did I.
Yesterday. Mm. And mainly to make a statement, but we'll be talking about that later.
Yeah.
And more or less, I've been sizing up my final Black Friday haul. Because I did get in on some sales since we talked last week that were kind of spillover.
Okay.
And so, I ended up getting NBA 2K16, Rare Replay, Super Mario Maker, and a DMC HD Remaster.
Hmm. Yeah, some good gaming in there.
Yeah. Hmm. And I almost... bit the bullet and got myself an amiibo, but that didn't happen, so.
Yeah, it's like, well, the thing about the amiibos, as I'm apparently learning from people, is once one enters the house, it's like
the
virus.
The floodgates are open.
Yeah, it just happens.
It's like a Beanie Baby, you know?
Yeah, they just kind of appear, you know, at your door, you ordered them or not.
They've reached the perimeter. My roommates have a couple downstairs, but I am in no possession of them myself, so
yeah.
I have that.
Yeah.
That being said, there are characters that I could actually see them rolling out that I would finally go ahead and pay up for, but I don't see it happening in the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
How goes your Falco hunt?
Not so great. I can't understand why that's well, actually, apparently it's like not even actually out yet.
Oh.
Or at least
I thought that was last month.
I checked on some sites that usually sell them, and they said available for pre-order, and they hadn't shipped yet, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what's going on there, but
well, you can make sure you get it at least.
Yeah, I guess I'll pick one up and eventually when I have, you know, more liquid funds.
Yeah.
But, you know,
how about you? What have you been playing?
Kind of the same as mostly, you know, the Rock Band 4, Dungeon Siege 3, you know. I started on The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing, which is kind of like a Diablo-style action RPG, which, you know, I'm okay with, except for the fact that this is incredibly buggy. Yeah, it has this tendency of, like, crashing, like, at random. So that's awesome.
That sucks.
Yeah. Not a very good thing to give out with games with gold, just saying. It crashes all the time. Yeah, so that's been one of my frustrating ones, because I'll play it for an hour and then it'll crash and I'll have to load it up again. It's not that great. It would be great if it, you know, didn't crash anyway.
Yeah.
Besides that, I started playing Shadow Complex Remastered, which is something that apparently came out of nowhere.
Yeah, we heard nothing about this one until it was available.
Yeah, it's going to be coming out for the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, but the PC version is available for free up until the end of the year, which you just got.
Is that going to be on Steam or?
No, it's on the. Well, it probably, when it actually gets released, it will probably be on Steam, but at the moment, it's only on the Epic Games Launcher, which is kind of it's one of those Steam type client things.
Steam knockoffs.
Yeah, yeah. The nice thing is. No, at least you can get the alpha of Unreal Tournament, which is actually really good. So,
ooh.
Yeah.
I wonder if my computer would run it, though.
Yeah, probably. If not, well, you're probably in the market for an upgrade at some time soon.
Anyway, I really will be. Yeah. It's getting to that point.
Yeah. So that's, you know.
If not a completely new system.
Yeah. And I also, like you, downloaded the Final Fantasy VII port. And I'm still trying to figure out where the 3.5 gigs of extra space is going.
Yeah, they did. They clearly didn't upscale anything. They didn't redo the textures. They didn't re-record the sound. Yeah. There was that remake trailer that they stuck in there, but that doesn't count for the entire.
No, I wouldn't count for 3 gigs worth. So it's like, I don't know. The only thing I could see is maybe they're using uncompressed audio instead of using MP3s. They may be using waves or whatever things the PS4 likes better.
Yeah,
because one thing I am noticing about the PS4 version is absolutely no load time.
Yeah, it's quite unencumbered.
Yeah.
Which in and of itself makes it worth the cost of admission, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the trophies look, from what I'm seeing on the list, look pretty easy. Apart from that Heiress one, which you really need to know about ahead of time before.
Yeah, that's definitely a second playthrough one for most people.
Yeah. Or be mindful of where you're going for people who have already played it. Because, you'll have to do some grinding to get that one.
It's true.
Yeah. But that's pretty much what I've been playing. I have a pretty good idea of what Brandon's been playing, but I'll let him talk about it.
Yeah, take a wild friggin' guess.
Pokemon.
You lose.
More SC.
Well, that too. Well, I have been playing Trails in the Sky, yes, but primarily I have, of course, been playing the big release of last week, this week, which was Xenoblade Chronicles X for the Wii U.
Yes.
Which
I still need to track down.
Yes. This game, first of all, very much aesthetically in many ways, is very reminiscent of Xenosaga.
Hmm.
Especially the way the character design is. In fact, the first character that you run into, Elma, is very reminiscent of Cosmos. In fact, she looks just like her, you know, except the color scheme is different.
They're really good at Monolith at drawing vague lines between the various branches of the series, despite the fact that they're all owned by different companies.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be one overarching story originally, and then they parted ways with Squaresoft, and that all went to hell.
Mm-hmm. But basically, so story is the Earth was basically destroyed when these two warring alien races that were at war with each other decided to have their big space battle right next to Earth, and basically Earth got caught in the crossfire and is now basically space dust. So what they ended up doing is they released a bunch of, you know, generation colony ships. I'd call them generation ships, but they were only in space for about 2 years. But then only a handful of them survived. They all landed on this planet, which is the planet that you play in. You're one of the survivors who wakes up from, you know, cryostasis. And, you know, basically, and yes, you can basically create and design your own character. So, you know, characters heavily customizable, choose male, female, age, you know, hair, color, makeup, scars, facial features, all that stuff. So you know, how tall you are, etc. Of course, unlike the Japanese edition, you don't get the chance to decide the bust size of your female character. But
because Nintendo.
Yeah. Your own character actually does not have, well, you can choose the voice that your character has, but, and keep in mind, I haven't gotten that far in the game yet because I've only had it for about a day or so, but, your own character doesn't really speak all of that much. At least not as first. You do have dialogue choices and stuff, and they're not like, you know, vague ones like, you know, like talk wheels that some BioWare RPGs have, but you know, basically you the first part of the game you spend most of it inside what's called the White Whale, which was the big colony ship that crashed on the planet. They've basically turned it into its own little city, you know, with like, you know, residential areas, shopping districts, barracks, that type of thing. Combat-wise, the combat is actually really smooth, and of course that's partly because, you know, I played the crap out of the first Xenoblade, and at first the combat system here is pretty much the exact same thing. You can actually switch between your, but all characters, as far as I can tell, both have melee and ranged weapons, and you can actually switch between them with just a button press very easily. So like when you start out, you have like an assault rifle and a dagger, and you can switch both through them pretty quickly.
That probably gave them a lot of flexibility in the way of battle design.
Oh yeah. Basically, yeah. And, you know, you get in touch with the enemies, you know, there's, you know, it basically you get single target, you can target them, you know, with just a button press again. And then, you know, when you're fighting, you know, you got your primary weapon attack, and then you got your other weapons like, you know, flat, you know, like flame grenades, and, you know, one attack, which is basically you taking your assault rifle and just whipping the shit out of someone with the butt end of it.
It has a frustration button.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel better
first
now.
I should also say, this is without a doubt the best looking game on the Wii U, period. There is no contention, there is no comparison. It is absolutely at the very top.
Does it run smooth?
Well, yeah, it runs really well. I mean, it runs smooth, but keep in mind, I got the data packs downloaded.
Yeah.
But yeah, that it runs really smoothly. Load times are very minimal. When they appear.
Yeah.
That is. Sometimes they just don't appear at all. It happens so quickly. So yeah, that's about as much as I can say about it right now.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm really liking what I'm seeing so far. It is unbelievably gorgeous. It is the best. I really cannot overstate how good it looks, especially on a system like the Wii U.
Yeah.
Which is literally just like two or three Wii U's stapled together.
Yeah, two Wii's stapled together.
It looks incredible.
Yeah.
And I've noticed some people have some complaints about, first of all, the fact that even though you get your character, you get your own character, there is no romance options in this game. I was like, dude, it's a JRPG. Those usually don't happen.
Yeah. Looking for the wrong kind
the
of
other
game here.
Problem people seem to have is the lip syncing, because it's basically the same kind of lip syncing that they had in the first Xenoblade.
Yeah.
But again, it's a JRPG.
I think the question of romance options might come from the fact that these are Nintendo JRPGs, mm-hmm. and a lot of these fans are fresh off of Fire Emblem Awakening, which is basically ship all the things, the game.
Yeah. You can take a woman who's like an old witch and pair her up with a little sorcerer who looks suspiciously young.
Yeah.
That is a complete whack job.
Explain yourselves, Japan.
Oh, damn
but,
Japan.
Far as I can tell, yeah, definite recommendation. It's a great game. I'll obviously have a lot more to say next week as I delve more deeper into it.
Yeah.
Although I don't expect to get my first scale by then, because by all accounts, it takes a little while before you could get a hold of one.
Yeah.
But as people have already warned, it's a gigantic game.
Yeah.
So this is probably going to be my primary gaming thing for the next couple of months.
Yeah.
At least until I get my PS4. And then I'll probably have something secondary. Well, that and also a certain Legend of Heroes game that's coming out later this month.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that a little later.
Yep.
But, so, yeah, also, of course, I am still playing Trails in the Sky more seriously now. And I finally got out of the Roland region, and I'm now in Bos.
Nice.
I got to tell you, the game really opens up once that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly.
And you get a very immediate sense of the structure the game's going to take as you play through it.
Yeah. You do, basically. Last night, I fought against the Capua family for the second time, the Sky Bandits.
Yeah.
First of all, those guys are annoying as hell. those who don't know, in the Capua family in Trails in the Sky, basically they're a bunch of Sky Bandits that are ran by this brother and sister team. In the first battle, you fight the sister, and the second one, you fight the brother. It's, you know,
so that's where you're at right now. Okay.
Yeah. I did that. I got thrown into, you know, I went and explored the airliner, then got thrown into jail by General Morgan because he's an asshole. Yeah. But, that's.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. That's sort of as far as I've gotten. I'm now at the point where Olivier recently rejoined my party, so it's
one of the best characters in the game.
Oh, I'm getting to that. First of all, I need to talk about Sejerazard. Sejerazard is the woman who actually is a senior bracer who trained both Estelle and Joshua. She's basically a... Well, I already talked about her for Let's Weekend, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about her again because it bears repeating.
I regret missing that segment. So.
Yeah, so but I'm, she's you know. Basically an Indian gypsy woman with giant tits who barely wears anything and fights with a whip. She's silver-haired. She's very professional until she gets drunk.
And there are a few survivors.
Yeah. There's like this... this weird after they did one of the one of the main story assignments from the guild, she says, let's go off and, you know, have a drink. And of course, Estelle says, you know, I don't think I'm old enough to drink. And she's like, well, okay, Joshua, I'll break you in. And I'm like, wait a second. Did she just say what I think she just said?
Yes, she did.
Keep in mind, I'm pretty sure Joshua is like 15 years old.
Roughly.
Yeah. And Estelle is like 16.
Yeah, but also keep in mind the consenting age in Japan is 13.
Yeah.
So
And also what you realize really quickly is that Joshua is basically walking perf bait for just about everybody in this game.
And he's aware of it, and it makes him extremely uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. And Olivier included. In fact, Olivier has a serious hard-on for him. Like,
well, Olivier is kind of... I'm starting to think that a paperweight would have that effect on him.
Yeah. So Olivier, he's basically he's this blonde-haired, blue-eyed, pretty boy from the Empire who is professionally a minstrel. You know, he's a singer and a musician. You know, he's apparently quite talented because he's been both an opera singer at like the biggest theaters at the Empire. He's played piano professionally. You know, he's all that stuff. He's also, he talks very grandiosely, and he's very, let's face it, pretentious, if we're honest.
Typical blue blood.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, he likes to cheese people off, mainly.
Yeah. You realize really quickly, he's actually, first of all, a very good marksman, and also a lot more intelligent and a lot more good at detective skills than he lets on. But, the first time he sees Joshua, he basically is like, it's just, you know, Estelle basically warns him, if I hear that you sink your fangs of lust into poor innocent Joshua. At one point, after one of the missions, he propositions Shazarizard so they can go out for a drink. She turns him down because, of course, she's a bracer and she's busy. She's like, well, okay, Joshua, I guess you'll do for the night. He's like, wait, what?
Yeah, and Shara continues to be one of the best characters in the game, like, throughout.
Yeah, because later on you find out she has a lot more hidden depths.
How she became a bracer. And then there's some other really good stuff in SC to develop her character.
Yeah. I have said, like I said also before last weekend, I very do like the battle system for this game. It's a really good sort of hybrid of traditional turn-based and simulation RPGs.
It's kind of like Grandia by way of Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, basically. I will admit, though, the one thing that does kind of – it does on occasion, you know, kind of irritate me is the fact that, you know, you'll get into battles with very, you know, otherwise very mediocre enemy bosses, and yet they'll be like half a world away before you have to fight them. But, other than that, you know, it makes the battles a bit more realistic, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it makes, you know, it gives more of the idea that, you know, this is a bunch of people who are in a place and they're fighting and not, you know, lined up on both sides of the room taking pot shots at each other.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been doing.
Cool. Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm not going to make too much of a fuss about this. Shadow Complex Remastered came out for the PC. The link will be in the show notes, so you can go to the website, get the launcher, and grab that for free until the end of the year. Don't know what it's going to cost on the Xbox One or PS4 when it comes out, but I'll probably end up picking it up there as well, because I really like that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you don't know what Shadow Complex is, it's kind of a Metroidvania-style game set in one of Orson Scott Card's universes.
Well, actually, it was there. It was actually that. What's the company behind it?
It was Chair Entertainment.
It's actually Chair Entertainment. It's actually their primary IP. It's just they gave Orson Scott Card ability to play to write the book for that, the tie-in for that particular thing, and he's the one who kind of came up with the idea that they were supposed to be, you know, progressives or whatever. Because if you play the actual game, the progressive, you know, the actual political orientation of the group that you're fighting against is actually really vague.
Yeah, kind of is, but you know, it's a good Metroidvania style game. It's got lots of content in there. Some pretty interesting achievements, like the skipping across the lake one, which is really kind of fun. Yeah, good luck getting that one. Yeah, you're gonna need quite a few items to be able to pull that one off.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's that. Besides that, let's see what we're going here. Oh, you want to talk about this KI story, Pat?
Yeah. So earlier this year, they did this whole Killer Instinct community fundraiser where they made Shadow Jago available for the first time since the Xbox One launched. Basically trying to raise funds for some tournaments and for the continued development of the game. And it was a huge success. It funded, I think, well over its goal. Mm-hmm. And so part of the one of the stretch goals for it, or maybe one of the main goals of it, was that they would make a properly balanced, distinct version of Shadow Jago to go on the main roster. That is being released on December 18th. Although those who, I guess, already have Shadow Jago will get him a couple weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. The only thing I don't get is if he's like properly, you know, distinct and balanced for tournament play. He shouldn't be a limited run character.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I kind of
put
think,
him on the roster.
I kind of think what they're going to do is they're going to do this limited run promotion, and then for season three, he'll just be opened up.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
because otherwise, there's going to be a lot of that's going to wander into a huge gray area as far as tournaments go.
Yeah,
and KI really doesn't need that kind of problem.
Nope. Yeah. So basically, coming December 18th will probably be the last chance that I'll have to get him for a while.
Yeah.
So I will have to make a note to pick that up.
And they're saying no promises thereafter.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. On the same lines, we got word of the next Street Fighter V beta, which is going to be the 17th to 20th of December. So we know what we're going to be doing those few days.
Yeah, that's just going to derail everything. And
we also got a character reveal too, didn't we?
Fang.
Well, Fong.
Fong. Yeah.
Fong. You say tomato, I say tomato.
Yeah. And he is. I'm not too. Interesting.
Well, we knew he was going to look absolutely bizarre when his voice files were data mined in the beta. So.
Yeah. He reminds me a lot of Yoshimitsu from Tekken.
He's not the nuts guy.
Yeah. And
he's the obligatory nuts guy. So.
A little bit of that and him, and a little bit of Faust from Guilty Gear.
Hmm. Yeah, I can kind of see that.
I wanted to say like Fo Fi from Toshinden and Moose from Ranma One Half.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen exactly.
By all accounts, he seems to be Sagat's replacement in Bison's little circle.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, Shadaloo really did have to replenish its ranks.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
We still aren't too sure who the final boss is, but we have an idea.
Hmm.
It's been suggested that it's Yurian's mother, Zen, a woman who's the woman who's the head of the Illuminati, basically.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's the idea.
I hadn't heard that version of the rumor, so
that would
make sense, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Considering Yurian is supposed to be a big part of the game story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what this beta will entail. If we'll maybe get some, some of those store items or whatever, just to test out like that, and hopefully we'll get Laura playable this time.
I would think we'd have to get the entire roster at some point during the beta.
Yeah, or at least close to it. You know, we might not get Fung, but maybe we get everybody else.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. And then more fighting game news. Let's see. NetherRealm's kind of detailed the Combat Pack 2, because one season pass isn't enough.
No.
Yeah.
But at least we got some interesting characters out of it.
Characters everywhere.
Yeah. So first of all, we got Bo Raicho, which, well, we already knew he was in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of fight. Well, you kind of fight.
But we also got the Xenomorph.
Yeah, so now we have the Alien and the Predator. So, yeah, we can see where that's going.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Jason versus Leatherface. So,
yep, Leatherface is in here.
Yeah.
We also got the Triborg, which is basically an amalgamation of Cyrex, Sector, and Smoke.
Yeah, which is kind of
the three variations.
Yeah, kind of an easy, kind of a nice way of handling it, to be honest. Instead of taking up three character slots, you basically just have one and use those three variations for it.
It works.
Yeah. So, yeah, there goes another $20 of my money.
I thought it was 30.
No, it's $20 for the pass.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, next up, an old demon from our past is resurrecting.
Yeah. Shaq Fu, look like it's going to be making a return. The tagline
this
is,
time,
we won't fool it up.
Yeah, you know, the more I read about this, the more it seems promising. They're not going to try and make it a fighting game this time. It's going to be an old-school beat-em-up with some modernized elements. There aren't nearly enough of those, and
they're also
every
not
time
take-
we get one...
They're also not taking themselves very seriously this time either.
That's true.
Yeah, well, they're taking it seriously in the sense that they're very well aware of how terrible Shaq Fu was.
Yeah.
So.
In fact, their Indiegogo page was at many points a rather nasty airing out of EA's handling of the first game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wondered, was the original Shaq Fu supposed to be another game at some point? Because it looks like another project that they had, and just so they could get investors interested, they had to throw Shaquille O'Neal into the middle of it.
Yeah, I don't
I've
know what it started as.
Point.
I think it actually did, and you know, start with Shaq and to begin with. Because I do remember that you know, Delphine was doing that back then. They were apparently they had to have Shaq in there for some, like, digitizing things or whatever they were doing back then.
It's also the reason that he couldn't be in NBA Jam until that series jumped the shark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was unfortunate.
Yeah. On the upside, because Shaq Fu was so terrible, the bar is set very low.
Yeah.
So pretty much anything they do will be better than the original Shaq Fu.
It's true. But that can be said of most games.
Yeah.
I look back at Sheriff Fu, and I'm still surprised that thing came out.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It really was not. And the Super Nintendo version was worse. I don't know how they managed to make that.
Well,
version
I can
worse.
Tell you that it's for one thing, there was content missing in the Super Nintendo version.
Yeah, and the controls had like a 1 second lag to them.
There was like two whole characters taken out of the Super Nintendo version.
Yeah.
And yeah, the lag was awful. The hit detection was
non-existent.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's interesting to note, like in that video that in Pat's link there, they actually they call out the control specifically.
Yeah.
So yeah.
The animation was good. I'll give them that.
But. Yeah, but I think they were actually asking too much of the Genesis and the SNES. There was just was so much going on there in the animation that they couldn't do anything else.
Which probably also explains why the characters were so tiny.
Yeah.
Yep. They definitely took a different approach, and it kind of bit them in the ass. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's how you learn. You
try do
things.
Understand. Yeah, you do understand what they were thinking.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah.
I think the main takeaway from the Indiegogo article was basically the first game was made to just crap out some game to sell copies based on a license that they knew would sell.
Yeah.
Whereas this game is they want to make something that would be spectacular with or without Shaq's involvement.
Yeah.
And to his credit, he's very involved with this. I was impressed.
Yeah. Well, Shaq, you know, he does play games. I mean, he's not like just some celebrity who is just going to stick his name on it.
No, he's one of us in that sense.
Yeah.
And you kind of get the impression that that was sort of the case with the first game. Like, he always has that whole comic book fan kind of thing about him.
Yeah.
That kind of sense. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it seemed like there was a vision there that he wanted to realize.
Yeah.
Mm.
But then the game came out and it was a turd. And
although no one would admit it at the time.
Yeah. But this is kind of his chance to get a do-over on that, and he's definitely got the right team working with him.
Yeah, I like the direction it's going. I mean, the art, mm-hmm. the art style looks excellent. The style of the game that it's going to be, kind of a character-driven beat-em-up, you know, reminiscent of DMC yeah. meets Streets of Rage. I mean, you know, when you call out Streets of Rage, your expectations are going to be really high.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's what's going to skyrocket him. I also noticed that every time you beat a boss, they become playable.
Yeah.
So it's got a little bit of a Double Dragon 3 thing going for it.
Yeah.
The good Double Dragon 3, not the arcade game.
there's a contentious point. Some people will argue that one with you.
But it's on my radar now.
Yeah, it's like
it's got the co-op. You have to have the co-op.
Oh yeah. If you don't have a beat 'em up, and if you have a beat 'em up, and you don't have co-op, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. Yep. So many studios make that mistake too.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, we're gonna be watching this one because I think it could be pretty good. So, and I never thought I would ever say that about a Shaq game.
Like what I was telling you before the show, the more I read about the new Shaq Fu, the more promising it seems, and I never thought that sentence would come out of my mouth.
yeah, we shall wait and see. And it's you know, what, next year, so it's not going to be too long.
Yeah.
But, you know, moving on from games that are coming out next year to ones that are coming out in a couple of weeks. Finally, Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel has a North American release date, and I'd imagine Pat already has his copy earmarked.
Yeah, I've got both limited editions on pre-order now, so
yep.
I probably won't be able to jump into it right away because I'll still be grinding away on SC,
yeah.
which is... I now know exactly how massive this game is, and... Yeah, I'm going to be on that one for a while. But as far as this goes, I mean, one thing I think people need to understand when they get started in this game is where it takes place in the series.
Yeah.
It takes place in the Empire.
Hmm.
Well, that's where it takes place, but I mean...
Timetable. Yeah.
Oh.
Hmm.
Because this game was greenlit for North American release, not because it's the next game chronologically after SC, but because it's a PS3 exclusive, and we don't know how much longer Sony's going to be offering up production slots for PS3 games.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to that point, Falcom actually went to Exceed and said, please get these games out because we know the Trails series is doing really well over there now, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to get every game released there. So we might have to fast track these two. And there is a Trails of Cold Steel 2 already set for next year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how this one came about. This is actually the fifth game in the series.
Yeah.
The next game chronologically would be Trails in the Sky the Third.
Yeah.
Which sort of bridges the Liberal Kingdom arc that we're playing right now with the Crossbell arc, which is Trails to Zero and Trails of Azure.
Mm-hmm.
Those games they can take their time with because there are PC versions, there are PlayStation Vita versions. You know, there's no huge rush to get those done, but the Trails of Cold Steel, that's the Erebonia arc, mm-hmm. and that actually takes place concurrently with the Crossbell arc. So,
yeah,
what you'll end up doing is you'll be playing Trails of Cold Steel, and you'll be seeing what's going on in Erebonia. And then when we hopefully inevitably get Trails to Zero and Trails of Azure, then we'll be seeing, okay, while all that was going on in the Empire, here's what was going on in Crossbell. And so they're just kind of switching the order of which the reveals come. But it's going to lead to the same kind of aha moment as events in one arc corroborate the events in the other.
Now the Trails of Cold Steel, this particular game, a lot of it actually takes place at a university, doesn't it?
It's a school. I think it's a I'm not entirely clear on this, so take everything I'm saying with a mountain of salt, but it seems to be like some kind of military academy, some really upscale one. Because as you find out just from talking from things you've already heard in the Trails in the Sky games, Erebonia is a really classist place.
It's very stratified. There's lots of class conflict.
And so Trails of Cold Steel takes place, from what I gather, at this really upscale military academy, because you know, everyone there is armed to the teeth, and they know what they're doing. So, fantastic battle theme, also, I have to say.
When you have a studio that has its own in-house rock band, I mean,
things are going to happen.
I'm not sure how well Rene Schwarzer is going to stand up as a series protagonist after. After the ones you'll get to know in Trails in the Sky, you actually in Trails in the Sky SC, Estelle meets her replacement for the next game, the third, early on. But because he's another party member in SC, but in the third, he actually becomes the main character. And that those two set a pretty interesting standard that I'm not sure Rene is going to be able to hold up to. And maybe I'll be surprised.
And do we know what the status of the third is?
Pending the success of SC.
But I mean, do they have a source that they can like pull from? Because apparently the PC version of that was mired in some weird licensing things, and I don't know if they were able to get it.
They can get it. You're probably thinking of Trails to Azure, which had a... It didn't have a Japanese PC version, but it had a Chinese PC version. So it would basically involve Falcom going and getting the license to the PC version from, I can't remember the name of the studio that actually ported it, but getting that license, probably doing their own PC port while they're at it for Japan, and then licensing that out to Falcom. But the third, as far as licensing goes, as far as I know, is squeaky clean. So. The only real problem is that it seems like Sony is more or less done offering up production slots for PSP games at this point.
So it's going to have to be.
It's
PC
like
version.
SC was almost the exception to the exception, but but at the same time, there is that PC version that is readily available, and if SC does well, and all indications are that it should be, then sooner or later, hopefully we'll be getting a confirmation of it.
So we also got an update on Final Fantasy XV's progress.
One of the programmers gave us a progress report. The first half of the game is basically done. From start to finish, foreplay to cleanup, it's you know, it's finished. Also, the game can be played from start to finish, but the second half of the game is still needs to be fleshed out a bit. And
there's like the content, dialogue, and all that stuff is not really there yet.
Yeah, battle design for some of the bosses, I would imagine, not completely thought out. But this is consistent with what...
Tabata.
Yeah. This is consistent with what Tabata said about that 60-80% portion of the development being the big hump that they had to get over, and the rest will just fall into place. This is consistent with that, and so
we're still probably a year away from this game coming out, though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A year would still put it in holiday 2016, and they seem to be married to that. So they really want this game out for 2016. So that that seems feasible.
Yeah.
Putting it a year out. I think it would be not quite a year. I could see it landing in October or November, for example.
Yeah.
But that is probably the kind of ballpark timetable we're looking at.
Yeah. And none of us are still interested in it. So there's that.
I'll be continuing to pay attention throughout the course of its development because I really want this game to be good.
Yeah.
I just can't bring myself to get excited about it.
Yeah.
Based on what I've played of the demo and hopefully they get it together because there is this huge resurgence of JRPGs coming along in the West, and it would be tragic if the Final Fantasy series wasn't right there to be a big part of it. And everything that we've seen from Square Enix up to this point, not just about Final Fantasy 15, but also about the Final Fantasy 7 remake, which we'll be getting to later in the show, seems like they're just bound and determined to keep Final Fantasy a separate thing from this great thing that's happening in the genre. And it defies logic considering that this is the same company that's working on Setsuna of Sacrifice and Snow, which looks absolutely brilliant, not despite its traditional roots, but because of them. And I think it's going to pay dividends for Square Enix. The first thing that Tokyo RPG Factory basically did was port ATB 2.0 to make an engine based on that for current hardware.
Yeah. We'll have to.
Hopefully they get it together.
Yeah.
There seems to be a real battle of philosophies going on at that company.
Yeah. Or schizophrenia.
Something like that.
You never know.
And now I'm not even, like, we were singing Yosuke Matsuda's praises not all that long ago on this show, and now I'm not really sure what to think of him.
I just don't know. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on.
There's probably a good deal of personality management going on there, too, though.
Yeah.
Nomura is a big personality to manage, and his opinions carry a lot of sway.
Anyways, I guess we'll move on to revisiting the whole Dead or Alive Extreme 3 debacle.
Do we have to?
Briefly. Yeah.
Tecmo Koei finally made an official statement. They simultaneously sort of, I don't want to say berated, but maybe admonished their spokesman who was running the Dead or Alive account for his choice of words describing the reasons for not releasing Extreme 3 over here, while at the same time basically saying
the exact same thing.
Yeah, he was on point, but let's just wag our fingers at how he said it. This is over.
Yeah. And meanwhile, some of the fallout from that is that Idea Factory is ready to just, not bring over games to the West if stuff like that continues.
Yeah, right now I don't see that becoming an issue because they've had no problems really getting their content over here. But if we see Sony and Microsoft start to go the way of Nintendo, which would be a complete disaster, I feel, then Idea Factory might just pull its games completely out of the West, and that's a shame because they're one of the things that are really right about the RPG genre at this point.
Yeah. On the upside, I mean, you know, we are kind of seeing kind of a cultural divide forming here between the West and Japan and even Europe, because, you know, Europe is far more progressive when it comes to sexual content. You'll see that on street signs even.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I honestly don't think that it's going to come to the major platform holders like starting to censor everything. I think everybody is well aware that the people who are making a big deal about this are people who don't play games anyway, don't understand the context that they're in. You know,
generally spend their lives searching for things to be outraged about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Basically are, you know, have very thin skins about just about any sort of sexual content at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regardless of there's things that are genuinely exploitative to women. And Dead or Alive Extreme 3 is not one of those.
Yeah.
You know. But anyways, so, you know, we've talked about that for the past few weeks. I think for the foreseeable future, we'll probably be done. Hopefully.
Yeah, I honestly probably wouldn't have even included that in the show notes if it hadn't been for the Idea Factory aspect.
Yeah.
Because I did feel that was noteworthy. And
hopefully
it gets taken as a signal that, you know, platforms will stay to hold their ground.
So, on more happy news, we've got a couple of Nintendo stories here for our Japanese listeners. You can now pick up standalone Wii U game pads over in Japan, and I believe these are the slimmer ones that just launched with the new Wii U bundles in Japan. So if you want to pick one of those up, they're available now.
Actually, I'm surprised they haven't been doing this before.
Yeah, well, they always said they were going to get to them, but they just never did.
Yeah. I guess people have, for the most part, been taking really good care of their Wii U controllers, which is a good thing because I'm sure they fly pretty good if someone is enraged. I'm almost wondering if this could be NX-related.
Well, there's not a whole lot of logic inside of the Wii U controllers, so I would imagine that they would probably work on the NX.
Backward compatibility or possible extra features in other games. The timing is interesting because Nintendo has gone to Foxconn ordering 20 million NX units, reportedly anyway. There is a report out that Nintendo has ordered 20 million NXs from Foxconn to be manufactured in 2016.
Yeah. There's also reports that Foxconn
told them to put the crack pipe down and said, we can give you about half of that.
Yeah. So it makes me, like I told you offline at one point, it makes me wonder if Nintendo isn't just going for the volume discounts straight off the bat and will be willing to take a little bit of a loss on the console to be able to sell it at $199.
Yeah. And if they're going with class of the industry hardware, then that's how they'd want to do it.
Yeah.
It just seemed to be a common thread there between standalone Wii U gamepads going on sale and a possible 2016 NX launch with a mountain of consoles. Like an unprecedented
mountain of consoles. You're not going to have any problems finding one. And that, you know, that's always been a problem with the Wii and Wii U launches, is that they were very hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Nintendo's trying to stave that off. Because one thing Nintendo is pretty well known for is their consoles really do sell at launch.
So, yeah.
You know, I'm not so sure about afterwards, but...
Yeah, that's where they get a lot of their capital from. And, you know, apparently they're looking to to make the most of that if this report is true.
Yeah. Hmm. So, yeah, we will wait with bated breath. Anyway, so we got some Sony stories, among the big one being PSX. We got a couple of minor ones here to tackle.
Yeah. Stuff that came out in the days leading up to PSX. So we reported on that PS2 emulator last week for the PS4 that the Star Wars game's using. And, you know, it's starting... they've started using it for other things too. Available now, you've got 8 PS2 games with some more on the way. The way they're implementing it, it doesn't really come off as their means of addressing backward compatibility. They still need to do that, mind you.
Yeah, they haven't addressed that yet. I mean, they're part of the way there. It's definitely the, like, I've seen videos of titles right now, and they are in fact. They're definitely emulated. I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's memory card management in there. The PS2 splash screen is there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it is emulated. They're being upscaled, obviously, by the GPU. Yep. So, you know, I'm just saying, I think they're part of the way there.
Yeah. To me, it seems like the emulator right now is. It's their way of prepping the HD remastered line for far, far more consistent releases.
Hmm.
Like, possibly churning these out at a rate of one or two a week at some point. I mean, these aren't just running emulated. They have trophy support. They have really all the features you expect of a PS4 game. And so that kind of justifies, I think, the asking price of $10 to $15 per game. And like I said, it's not a replacement for classics. It's not a replacement for true backward compatibility. These are almost like proper PS4 versions of these games, and when you frame it like that, it becomes a bargain, because how much do you pay for HD remastered titles at the store?
Yeah, they're usually going to charge you $50-$60 for those anyway. So, you know, Dark Cloud for $15, not that bad.
Trophy support and 1080p, 60 frames per second.
Yeah, well, for most games, I think GTA has some issues there, but we'll see. But it's a step in the right direction. It, you know, I think for firmware 4.0, they really need to address that. Actually, get proper PC in there, because you know, Sony has this tendency of doing things halfway. Yeah. You know, and right now, I'm getting the sense from them that they're becoming a little complacent with their number one spot.
Yeah, and we saw how that went last time.
Yeah.
Maybe what we need is like a, you know, Sony has been really big on the whole hashtag campaign, you know, with building the list and so on. Maybe we need a hashtag campaign of just taking pictures of our PS1 and PS2 libraries. And like, I don't know what we'd name it right away, but just to get those pictures out, show Sony how much we've invested in their legacy platforms, and let them know how important it is that we continue getting this hardware support for, you know, continue getting consoles that will run these games, because I've got close to 100 PS1 games. I've got something like 250 PS2 games, and you know, I'm keeping a mountain of hardware around to sustain my ability to play those, but I really don't feel like I should have to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe something like that would get Sony's attention, and
it's worth a try.
Yeah.
So there's that. Another little bit of Sony news is, according to a post on NeoGAF, they found some evidence that Sony is going to be unlocking the 7th CPU core for gaming use. Which is a good thing, because, you know, right now, 2 of the CPU cores are reserved for the OS, so no game can use more than 6. It's kind of been a problem for, you know, games like Assassin's Creed Unity, which is kind of cut and CPU bound.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I expect in an upcoming SDK release, that seventh core is going to be available for developers, which is going to mean that the divide between the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 is going to widen.
Hmm.
Yeah. The Xbox One did this last year to kind of close that gap a little bit, so that Xbox One versions of multi-platform games didn't
Do we have
run.
Some examples of games that would have not been possible without that extra core Witcher at the 3. Xbox One launch?
Witcher 3.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
That game is very, very graphically intensive. Yeah, Metal Gear Solid
yeah,
5.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. So there's that. It's good to see Sony constantly evolving their platform, so we'll see how it goes. And finally, the big event of the week was PlayStation Experience. Man, what a lot to digest.
We got to start with the most obvious one, which is we finally got an actual trailer for the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Yeah, that apparently showed some gameplay, so... Yeah, well,
I know how Pat feels about it, but I'm just going to be honest. I actually liked what I saw.
Well, I didn't dislike it, but I'm not like over the moon about it either.
Well, I'm not either, but I'm still hyped.
Yeah,
I'm hyped, but I'm not overhyped.
Yeah,
I'm not underhyped either, but I'm the right amount of hyped.
Just the proper amount of hyped.
The sensible amount of hyped.
Yeah.
Look, I get it. It's not the old school turn based,
which basically decimates the entire. Like one of the great things about Final Fantasy VII when it came out was it was pretty much the ultimate kick back and relax game, and you know, looking at the pacing of this, this isn't going to be that. And if it's not going to be that, then what is it?
Yeah.
And you look at sort of the action direction that, like the extreme action direction of Final Fantasy 15, which this seems to be emulating for the most part.
Are you sure? It reminded me a lot more of Kingdom Hearts, to be honest. Because if you look down, you know, it's got there's the menu attached to it at the bottom. In the corner, and you've got, you know, attack and magic and all of that. So it reminds me a lot more of, you know, something you'd see from Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, there was definitely some menu-based things going on there. It's like,
yeah,
but we only got a...
There's some menu-based things going on in Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
it doesn't really...
Yeah.
We got to keep in mind, the game is still off another 2 years at the very least. So... You know, there's always a chance that they're going to go back and add some new stuff.
Yeah. And
I would not be entirely surprised if they add a turn-based option in there.
Yeah.
At some point.
Basically develop two games side by side.
Well, no, two styles side by side.
Yeah. You know, I honestly see them, if they're going to follow the actual story arc completely and not add anything... I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see them add a reskinned option of the original Final Fantasy VII in there, just with the new graphics.
Yeah.
You know,
that would sell me the game.
Yeah. So
it would, because that's what I want a version of Final Fantasy VII pretty much as it was, maybe with a better localization, and doesn't look like asshole. That's what I wanted this remake to be.
Yeah.
And I didn't want an action RPG. I didn't want something that is going to require my undivided attention every second that I'm playing it, because that's not relaxing.
No.
And there, you know, I've said this earlier. There are so many JRPGs coming out now that are just really great kick back and relax titles, and that's part of the appeal. That's a big part of the appeal.
Mm.
And I just wish the Final Fantasy VII remake was going in line with that way of thinking. And
I don't know.
Right
from
now,
that, we can at least talk about the parts that are actually good, which is that holy crap, it looks amazing.
It does.
It does at that.
And you know, I'll admit that the voice acting wasn't that good, but then again, this is.
I thought it was on point.
Well, it was on point, but it wasn't. It was a little dull. I guess is how I would say it. But you know, obviously they got more they can do to that later.
Yeah, still, you know, like we said, it's like 2 years away, so and this is by no means any sort of final footage.
Yeah, and I got it, yeah, all the characters that we saw looked great. Hmm. You know, Cloud looks great, Barrett looks great, you know, they showed Wedge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think all of the Avalanche guys were in the trailer.
Yeah. Pretty much all of them. A lot of people kept, you know, there was some preview material said Tifa was in there, but of course she isn't in there.
Nope.
As far as I saw.
Yeah. But it almost seems like, at least for their part of the game, the Avalanche members are going to be playable characters. At least that was the impression that I got.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those things where you can switch between the characters at any given time. Yeah. Which would be actually pretty reminiscent of how things go in Xenoblade.
Hmm. Yeah, this is one that we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on. It's an important game in terms of, you know, PlayStation legacy.
Relevance to the industry.
Yeah. And I would not be surprised if they get feedback from all of this and take it, you know, back to Japan with them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, maybe crying guy is crying some more.
Probably.
Yeah, anyway. So beyond the Final Fantasy VII remake, we also got word that the Day of the Tentacle remaster is going to be coming out in March.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool.
This is a classic LucasArts adventure game.
Yep.
And one of the crown jewels of that whole group of games.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad to see that this is also based on the CD-ROM one, so you got all the voice cast in there and all the good stuff is, you know, appropriately cheesy, but also really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, Full Throttle. There's one that I haven't heard in a long time.
That's another one. That's Tim Schafer's project.
Now, Phil, you reacted hugely to this game when they announced it. I wasn't there for it back in the day.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, biker gang metal type setting. It's just really well done. It's a little bit more, I wouldn't say serious than you know, more of the Tim Schafer stuff there. Mm. But it's you know, it's definitely worth looking at. It's got a nice.
So is it another point and click adventure?
Yeah, it is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
See, I couldn't even gather that from what they showed. I thought maybe it was like a racing game with story elements to it, or I couldn't tell, honestly. Well,
the opening scene basically is you know, you're basically riding down the road, and you're on your basically your Harley, beating the crap out of another biker with a chain, Road Rash style.
Yeah.
The really good LucasArts adventure games are the ones that look like an animated movie that you can play.
Yeah.
And Day of the Tentacle and Full Throttle are definitely those two.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, this is one, you know, if you've never played any of those LucasArts ones, this is one to probably look at.
Mm-hmm.
I
played Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Oh, that's, yeah, one of the best as well, so.
Secret of Monkey Island, you know, Loom.
Yeah.
And none of those, just Sam and Max Hit the Road. That was my only exposure to those back in the day. But so if you were compiling a list of the top point click adventures, are these 1 and 2?
Or pretty close.
Full Throttle would probably be number 3, I would guess. Okay. Yeah. My first one would probably be King's Quest 6. So
pretty much any Sierra game you could put at the top of that list.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff, and I'm glad to see that they're coming back. So because they're getting harder and harder to play, even though GOG does exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I also recommend Grim Fandango, but that's another subject.
Yeah, that's a good game, despite Tim Schafer. Anyway. Yeah, we won't talk about that. What we will talk about is Brutal.
Yeah. That one got my attention. It's really going to redefine the ASCII adventure game.
It looks like a beat-em-up with mutant ASCII art. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, let's have some of that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah. It's like, it's one of those games that looks so stylish. It's just, you know, that dark art style with the, you know, green ASCII art, really, like, it's eye-catching, for if not the best. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was really, really cool. If you didn't have a chance to look at that, go check out the trailer on YouTube. It's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next up, we got Neo.
Yep, Neo.
That's the new game from Team Ninja. It looks to be sort of an action RPG, kind of Dark Souls-y type game.
Can we still call it new?
It's not really that new, because we first saw it at
E3 2005.
PS3. Yeah.
This game has an odd pedigree, because it's more or less based on an unfinished script that was written by none other than Akira Kurosawa.
It was, once again, back at E3 2005, didn't it share a trailer with Heavenly Sword?
It did.
Probably.
Yeah.
And then...
well, they ran back to back, but... Yeah,
yeah, it was it was Koei property at the time. Since then, they've merged with Tecmo, and the whole project's been handed off to Team Ninja at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, and it looks like it's actually going to be finished this time, so...
Yeah.
All we and it was one of my, it was one of my most anticipated PS3 games when they announced it back in 2005, so...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It looks good.
Oh, yeah.
10 years has done nothing to dull my anticipation of it.
No. Only thing we got to wait and see is how Team Ninja is going to stick tits into it.
Yeah, because they will.
They will.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Somehow. There's a way.
Yeah.
If they got to stick them on a tree, they'll do it.
Yeah. We'll wait for that. And finally, we still got a lot to cover. A couple of SNK announcements. King of Fighters 14.
One we knew about, the other one about. Came way out of left field.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
King of Fighters 14, we actually saw some gameplay, and there was some very intrepid individuals who live-streamed the crap out of that game.
Mm-hmm. Real MVP.
Yeah. The real MVP.
Live-streaming over an hour of footage on his cell phone.
Yeah. And you wonder why his battery life sucked that day.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
50 characters. So
yeah, that select screen was ridiculous.
Yeah. Two of them will be edit characters, so they won't have designated teams. I was kind of surprised to see Angel in the lineup from the Nests arc, because she has to be one of the most technical 2D fighting characters in history. If I were to before knowing that there were going to be 50 characters, and that's probably going to use most of KOF's catalog altogether, but before knowing that, she was one of the last characters I would have expected to see show up in the trailer.
Yeah. And from what I'm seeing from the gameplay, it really doesn't look terrible. It doesn't look chunky. It looks like some real time and effort was spent here.
Yeah.
We're only seeing
Falcon
3 of those
Falcon never
characters.
Screws around. I'm still a little skeptical knowing that Frame Nazi Oda is involved, but I don't know. Like, your mileage may vary. I get the impression that he was pretty highly responsible for a lot of that stuff in Street Fighter IV.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm wrong about that, and he wasn't part of the problem there. But you know, and if he wasn't, then. I've got nothing but high hopes for this game. It looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it looks like how you properly put a game like King of Fighters in 3D.
Yeah.
So I, honestly, it doesn't look like a game that's going to be ready for next month, despite what they've said in the past, but, they've got my attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm looking at that select screen there, just 50 characters, let's say 48, whatever.
No, they said 50 specifically, so...
Specifically 50?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it'll be there'll be two non-designated characters.
Okay.
You know, kind of like Shingo in 97 or...
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because from what I'm seeing from there, that's a lot of characters to weave a story around. So my thinking is that KOF 14 is just going to do away with story altogether.
I think it's going to start a new arc.
It could.
Because 13 was the conclusion to the Ash arc that started in 2003. And so maybe they'll make a dream match game to give them time to put a new story arc into motion. But if I were to, just knowing how SNK operates, I think they'd be using 13's visual direction if they were doing that. That's just my gut feeling. Take it, you know, take it for what it's worth. But
Well, if you know, SNK is to be believed, we're not going to have to wait very long to play this game. So, you know, January is not that far away at this point.
I'll import it.
Yeah, if that's January in Japan, then nowhere else. Yeah.
We'll localization see. Might take a little while. I imagine they're going to partner with Atlas again.
Yeah. I'm glad the PS4 is region-free. And finally,
shout out to Sony for getting that one right.
Yeah, and Microsoft. They do that as well.
Yep.
Finally. The other SNK announcement was Last Blade 2, which definitely an interesting choice, but one I'm totally okay with.
That's on the short list of holy shit announcements that they could have. You know, it could have been that one. It could have been Mark of the Wolves.
Well, I think Last Blade 1 and Garou are both on PS3.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Just remember, the first Last Blade was one of the first big projects that Daisuke Ishiwatari worked on.
Yep.
Before he went to do the Guilty Gear series. So, you know, that he's part of the reason that first game was so, well, magical.
And the second game,
if you want
game,
something to go ahead.
Well, the second game didn't stray too far from it because he did have involvement in it, but he left before it was finished.
Yeah.
But I'd imagine that most of the work that he did still made it in.
And, you know, the original came, you know, this Last Blade 2 originally came out all the way back in 1998.
One of those games that really showed what the Neo Geo was capable of.
Yeah. And if you look at it today, it doesn't look like it's dated.
No.
It still looks fantastic.
It's like a 2D Soul Calibur with all of the artistic inclinement that you would expect from a game that could make that claim.
Pretty much.
Well, there's another one that's going to be downloaded to my PS4 as soon as it comes out.
Oh, yeah. Did they say anything about online play?
No, they didn't mention anything about it, but I'd imagine it probably will be included. This is going to be a full... I'm not sure if it's going to be a full release. I don't think they're going to do retail, but...
I doubt it.
Yeah, they'll probably do online. And next up, you guys are going to have to talk about this one because I have no idea what this game
is. That's going to make owning a PS4 so much better.
This is
the sequel to Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, which was an RPG from Level 5 with cinematics and art direction from Studio Ghibli.
It might have been one of the most influential games in the whole JRPG resurgence that we're seeing right now.
Xenoblade.
I stray a little bit away from the hype behind it only because when they mentioned Level 5 and JRPGs, I was probably the only person on Earth who would have rather heard about a White Knight Chronicles 3 than Ni No Kuni 2, but I'll certainly take this. I mean, it's day one purchase. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Basically, in this one, it looks like I'm not sure if it takes place in the same world that the last game did, but it looks like you're apparently playing a young king who's trying to build up his kingdom. It still looks incredible.
I'll give it that. It definitely looks really nice.
And I'm wondering, are they still going to do the same kind of battle system that the last game did?
I hope so,
because I loved the battle system from the last one. Basically, what they did in the last game is it's kind of like an action RPG if it was done as a Pokemon game, basically. Because you basically collected and leveled up your own sort of little monster characters that your main characters would summon, and then you would primarily play as them.
You could play as yourself, but it wouldn't go as well.
Nah, because they're kind of weak, to be honest. You only use the main characters for like spells and stuff.
If you haven't played Ni No Kuni on the PS3, absolutely go and download it because
it looks amazing.
If I were compiling a list of mandatory 7th generation games to play, that would be on it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Hmm. It is the magic of Studio Ghibli that is playable.
Yeah. Just there was another JRPG that they mentioned during the event, but I can't remember what it was at the moment. Anyway.
It's not on the list, apparently.
Yeah, we forgot to put it on there, but anyway. What we did put on there was Yakuza 5 and 0.
Zero.
Stateside. Yakuza 5?
Yakuza 5 coming out Tuesday, by the way.
Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Still no word that I've heard on a price point, but it's coming Tuesday.
Yeah, probably $30, which is what the other Yakuza's came out at. Yeah. And 0, we're getting it in the West.
2016.
Surprising.
Yep.
But Sega doesn't do console games.
Well, I thought they stopped.
Once again, I think that whole thing cleared up. I think that whole thing cleared up once they finished their move to Southern California. they were in the middle of moving. They didn't really want to think about anything except like their mobile operations and PC stuff that was already really active. Mm. They also apparently floated a bullshit rumor about Yakuza Zero's fate being in the hands of Atlus, which I guess was used to cover up this announcement that Sega was going to handle it all in-house, you know.
Yeah, because if you put it in the fate of Atlus, Atlus is going to go like, yeah.
Unlike we're trying to make money.
I'm not sure if Sega understands how a bait and switch is supposed to work, but I think if they'd left it up to Atlus, we'd have it by now. But no, this is good news. It's good to see this game and this genre continue to grow in the West, and it's only going to provide a really great environment for Yu Suzuki to release Shenmue 3.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because those who don't know, the Yakuza games are basically the spiritual successor to the Shenmue games.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah.
And I've long said that their struggles in the West previously their struggles pretty much everywhere really had a lot to do with Sega's own skepticism about bringing Shenmue back.
Yeah.
And so, I think we can forget about that whole Sega leaving the console market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they seem to have kind of abandoned that whole stance, so we'll see how that goes.
And it only took Atlus to do it.
Yep.
Whatever it takes, I'm loving what I'm seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. So finally, we'll talk about PlayStation VR, which was kind of surprising. They spent quite a bit of time talking about PlayStation VR in a medium that can't show it at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, okay. This was one of those damned if they do and damned if they don't kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, they got to do it. So
they have to promote it. They have to have some kind of stage demo, and they're going to have to continue, for better or worse, you know, coming up at E3 and all these other trade shows that we're going to be seeing next year.
Yeah. The good thing for them was that everybody at the show could go and play them.
Yeah.
Because they were there.
And as long as they can manage that, then there shouldn't be any problems.
Yeah. So we started off with this thing that's maybe not Discs of Tron, but probably was.
Mm-hmm.
Demo. just wouldn't call it that because they'd be sued into the ground.
Yeah. But that's pretty much what it was. And that looked actually pretty cool. I mean, if they turned that into
if you're looking to sell a VR headset, that's a pretty damn good place to start.
Yeah. So we saw that. It looked pretty good. It's one of those things. Maybe as a game on its own, it probably wouldn't hold up, but as part of maybe a minigame collection, that would probably
back
be pretty
collection
cool.
To get things going. Put it into the headset and let people play with it.
Yeah. Then there was, let's see, we saw Ace Combat 7.
That is probably the perfect game to use to sell a VR headset at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely a good bridge game, because that'll play, you know, properly on a, you know, regular 2D television, and it'll play.
And I think that's where
VR
we're going to be seeing a lot of our PlayStation VR support come from for a really long time.
Yep.
I think it's going to be a long time before they really feel comfortable dipping their feet in the exclusive waters.
Hmm.
So it's mm-hmm. going. We're going to see a lot of games coming out that are mainline PS4 games that also have that VR support.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one, which was kind of surprising, we saw Res Infinite. I didn't think we'd see another Res game for ever. But Tetsuya Mizuguchi was on stage with a flashing VR suit, which was apparently also vibrating.
Yeah,
so he was having a good time.
Because Rez.
Because Rez.
Oh, man. Rez is a game that, you know, it's not tip very long, but man, is it addictive.
Yeah. It's like we were talking at one point on the show about using VR for good. I'm not entirely sure.
We bring this up a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure that Rez qualifies as that.
Yeah, this is more the irresponsible Sonic the Hedgehog port, kind of using VR for evil.
Yeah.
All I can really say is, as seriously as I've ever said it, they have those take frequent breaks while playing warnings on games.
Yeah.
Rez is one where you should probably heed those warnings.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those games even before it got VR support. Now I'm genuinely worried about people. I'm frowning over my keyboard as I say this.
Enjoy your seizures, people.
Play it, enjoy it, but do take those frequent breaks, because I do fear that this game will kill you.
Yes. It has a very high possibility of causing mental issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, among other things.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the Polybius port.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was, another interesting one was 100-foot robot golf, which doesn't leave much to the imagination of
it's
what it is.
Exactly what it says on the tin, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah. Now, this is using VR for good. Because you don't really need to do a lot of motion for golf, but this concept is just ridiculous enough that it works.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also no goblin, so, I mean, they did roundabout, which was stupid as all hell, but it was awesome. That's what No Goblin does.
I just thought it was awesome that they were actually making Evangelion references in the trailer.
Yes. That was really
That
really
just
cool.
Completed it.
Yeah. And then Ubisoft showed off Eagle Flight, which, you know, of all of the VR stuff that I saw, that was the one that stood out for me.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about this during the press conference, and Ubisoft is one of those companies where you introduce new hardware to them, a new concept, a new way to deliver gameplay. They're just going to get it.
Hmm.
Like, one of the things I mentioned was they got their hands on dev kits for 7th generation consoles. Right away, you get Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, It's just second nature to them. They can get the visual concept, they can get the gameplay concept, and they can just craft something that works.
Yeah.
And that's what this is.
Yeah. Well, it looks like for Eagle Flight, they're actually using some of the assets from Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't really mind, because, you know, why not? They're really gorgeous landscapes that they've got, so you may as well use them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's like, you know, I don't know anybody who hasn't really wanted to fly like a bird. So this is this is a primal urge for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And for, you know, for VR, I think this is going to sell units.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. It's like, okay, fine, I'll buy your headset. Okay. Yeah. Let me fly like an eagle. Fine, I'm right in.
I do kind of wonder, like, what kind of game is it going to be when you... I don't like conceptually, yes, it looks fantastic. But what's going to happen when they're in the development room and, okay, we got to take all these mechanics, we got to take this base concept and we got to make a game out of it. And again, they're good at that.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like, what kind of game is this going to be? Or is it maybe just another tech demo that might go on a disc that might share a disc with that whole Discs of Tron thing?
Well, I see them probably doing something like a Pilot Wings with the for this kind of game.
That would be interesting.
I also wouldn't be surprised if there's like a later on they'll have like DLC for like, you know, different landscapes.
Yeah.
So like, you know, this one mostly is over Paris. Maybe you'll eventually be able to go over, you know, Milan or Venice or stuff
like
that.
It will be really disorienting when you hit the boundaries of these environments.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll have to figure out some way of looping around because if you hit the boundary and then you just stop, that's, you know, you're probably losing your lunch.
I wouldn't be surprised if what they end up doing is just like give you a warning that you're fixing to hit the barrier, and then once you passed it, the screen will probably just go dark, and then you'll show up, you know, just at the other side.
Yeah, could be.
Or better yet, just have a bag attachment to the VR headset. If you're gonna puke into this.
Yeah.
Which I do believe will be an issue for a lot of people when this does roll out.
For some people, it depends on that. Well, you know, how the latency is, and well, even with low latency, that's still an issue for some people. It's just, you know, the screen is telling you you're moving, and your inner ear is going nope. gets confused.
And then you pile into the nearest receptacle, which hopefully is available.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But, you know, but the more I see about VR, the more I'm pretty convinced that this is going to happen. And 2016, we're going to have a lot of good choices.
Yeah. The only thing that kind of surprised me is that we didn't see a release date or price point.
Yeah. Well, it's still slated for first half 2016. Price point TBA.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Kind of would have hoped that they would have, you know, announced that at their big show, but there's still E3 that has to come around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably end up launching around that time. And that was PSX in a nutshell, mostly. And that's a very large nutshell.
Yeah. It was a great show. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yep.
Feel really good about being a PS4 owner right now.
Yeah. Not a whole lot of Sony first party stuff to really talk about, but you know.
When the PlayStation brand was at its strongest, it was always the third parties that were carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they're getting back to that. I mean, we did see like the staples, you know, we saw Uncharted 4 and whatnot. That's how they started the show, in fact. But it's like, mostly it's the third parties that were being showcased, and the indies. There were a lot of indies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
A lot of indies, a lot of good-looking indies, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Death's Gambit, that looked really cool.
Yeah. Mm. I think Adult Swim Games had a really good showing altogether.
Yeah. Didn't see any Bloodstained, but we actually, for the Kickstarter people, we actually did get a little bit of an update on there. Don't know if you got your email, Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
With the two shaders?
Yep.
Yeah. Which of those two were you preferring?
I really cannot decide, to be honest with you.
It's hard to decide. Because the first one, it's kind of saturated, kind of everything pops. But I also like the muted tones of the second shaders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just hoping that they make those options that you can just switch between and make it look the way you want. Cause,
Yeah.
At this point, both of them look excellent. And I think that's going to call it for this week.
Works for me.
Yep. And remind everybody that if you're not subscribed to the show, you can subscribe on iTunes, on TuneIn, or via RSS or your favorite podcatcher. If you use Pocket Cast on Android, we're there. Check us out. If you want to leave comments, head to smashpad.com. The show page, there's comment form there. Just drop it in there. We'll check them out. And I think that's going to do it for us. I'm Filippo D'Anolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And we'll see you all next week.